When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, Pharmacist Eric Christensen. Thank you so much for listening today. Go to reallifepharmacology.com, get your free 31-page PDF on the top 200 drugs. Great study guide, great refresher, great study tool. If you're taking pharmacology classes, board exams, absolutely a no-brainer to go get that. Simply an email will get you access to that. All right, with that, let's get into the drug of the day today, and that medication is methimazole. If you remember, a few weeks ago, I did propylthiouracil, and these two medications are from the same class of anti-thyroid medication. So why would we want to block thyroid hormone? Well, that's probably pretty obvious if you've got a patient with hyperthyroidism. Mechanistically, how does this drug work? So ultimately, I think it's really important to remember T3 being one of the major thyroid hormones, the most active thyroid hormone. And ultimately, methimazole is going to block the production of T3. How it does that, it basically prevents iodine. It prevents oxidation of iodine. By doing that, that's a key player or a key role in the production formation of T3. And so by blocking that process, ultimately you're going to block T3 formation. Now, this is important to remember in the fact of a patient maybe with acute hyperthyroidism who's very symptomatic. Maybe they're a hospitalized patient, for example, in that methimazole doesn't touch circulating T3, T4. So again, that T3 in the bloodstream, that's going to have the physiological action of thyroid hormone, that's not going to be prevented or stopped by methimazole if it's already been produced. What it's going to do, what the drug's going to do, is prevent further production, or at least reduce further production of T3 and ultimately bring down those levels. So it's not an immediate fix in an emergency type situation, which is why we often pair methimazole or PTU with a beta blocker, for example. And I wanted to touch a little bit more on that because I don't think I did it much in the propylthiouracil podcast. So if we've got an acute life-threatening situation with thyroid storm, typically propylthiouracil is probably going to be the one that's selected unless there's a contraindication or compelling reason not to do that. And it's a little bit better, at least acutely, at blocking T3 formation. Now, if you remember back from that propylthiouracil or that PTU podcast, I talked about methimazole probably is what you're going to see most often in practice when it comes to a chronic long-term use, okay? And that certainly is true, of course. So getting into dosing a little bit, one of the reasons why that methimazole is used kind of preferentially long-term is administration. So we don't have to administer this drug as often as PTU, which in a chronic type situation, we don't want patients to have to take medications frequently because we know the more and more we require of patients, generally the less and less they're going to do or have the ability to remember to do. So because of that, methimazole is favored more on a chronic basis. And that initial dosing of methimazole may vary depending upon the severity of hyperthyroidism. So clinically, you're going to look at the patient, and that starting dose could range from anywhere to 5 to 20 milligrams, maybe even up to 30 or 40 if it's a really severe type situation. We also may look at T4 to help guide dosing. So in patients with kind of a more modestly increased T4, maybe 1 to 1.5 times the upper limit of normal, that's a patient where maybe we start, you know, only 5 to 10 milligrams. 1.5 to 2 times upper limit of normal, maybe we get a little bit more aggressive, 10 to 20. And then, of course, you know, 2 times and above, really, you know, more severe cases, you may see that 20 to 30, possibly even up to 40 milligram initial dosing there. So methimazole is typically dosed just once a day, and because of its kinetics, it's got a longer duration of action. So with those kinetics, we can get by with once daily dosing. However, in practice, you may see it split from time to time, and this is primarily due to adverse drug reactions and tolerability. And so getting into those adverse effects, GI upset can happen with this medication, and that's going to be a dose-dependent effect. So in patients where I see the dose of methimazole split, that primary reason that we're doing that is likely to minimize GI upset. Other adverse effects to pay attention to, symptoms of hypothyroidism. So just a quick review here of what symptoms of hypothyroidism or low thyroid thyroidism looks like. Fatigue, weight gain, cold sensitivity, maybe some weakness, effects on skin and nails, so dry skin, brittle fingernails. Those are primary symptoms of hypothyroidism. Other adverse effects potentially, probably not as common, rash, myalgia, taste disturbances, so this is kind of a unique one with this medication. And then rare adverse drug reactions, myelosuppression risk, and LFTs being increased. So that's liver function tests being increased have been reported as well. Now, I will note, I mentioned the convenience of dosing it once a day. That's an advantage for chronic use over propylthiouracil. PTU has a boxed warning regarding hepatotoxicity. And methimazole does not have that. So that's definitely another advantage of methimazole as well. Monitoring parameters, probably going to be pretty straightforward. Thyroid hormones, so T4, T3, TSH. Hepatotoxicity, CBC, potentially is clinically indicated, but probably not something we're going to routinely do if there's no clinical indication to do that. And then lastly, I wanted to mention that duration of action as far as a pharmacokinetic principle goes. Duration of action with methimazole is 36 to 72 hours. So again, goes back to demonstrating why once daily dosing is a possibility there. All right, let's take a quick break from our sponsor and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. Go check out meded101.com/store. I've got a great list of resources for pharmacists who are preparing for board certification, BCPS, NAPLEX, ambulatory care, BCMTMS, geriatrics exam, all those resources are at meded101.com/store. In addition, if you're a nurse, we've got the MedEd 101 Guide to Nursing Pharmacology, basically a great listing of really common stuff that you're going to see in practice as well as on your nursing board exam. So again, you can find that on Amazon, MedEd 101 Guide to Nursing Pharmacology. If you're another healthcare professional, we've got a ton of links at meded101.com/store. Guides on drug interactions, polypharmacy, so that's a great resource for folks who are in the geriatric space as well. And again, your support there at meded101.com/store helps support this podcast. All right, wrapping up with drug interactions. Not too many to worry about with methimazole, which is a good thing. Digoxin concentrations can go up, certainly. Warfarin action can be reduced, so it can kind of counteract the effects of warfarin. Obviously, in the case of digoxin and warfarin, we can check drug levels there and ensure that we're remaining stable and basically within the goal therapeutic range that we're looking for. Digoxin, I'm seeing less and less use in the setting of heart failure. We're getting more and more medications with SGLT2s and things like that, so maybe not quite as relevant. And then warfarin has fallen out of favor some compared to some of the newer anticoagulants like apixaban, rivaroxaban. I've had podcasts on all of these medications I've mentioned in the past, so go search reallifepharmacology.com and you can get a lot more details on those drugs as well. And then lastly, as far as drug interactions go, I will briefly mention, you know, myelosuppression risk. So if you have a patient who's already taking, you know, higher doses of chronic corticosteroids, there is potentially a risk that we could have an additive effect there. Again, pretty rare with methimazole causing that, but I think it is important just to note that. And then, of course, that hepatotoxicity risk definitely is not as great with methimazole, but if you think about other drugs that can cause hepatotoxicity or patient situations, so such as alcoholism, for example, or alcohol use disorder, valproic acid comes to mind, excessive acetaminophen intake. So these are all situations where we can kind of maybe add on to that effect of hepatotoxicity. All right, well, I think that wraps up the podcast for today. If you enjoyed this episode, found it helpful, please leave a rating, review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. If you want to reach out to me, you can find me mededucation101@gmail.com. And of course, please support the sponsor, meded101.com/store. Any purchases there go directly to help support this podcast and help keeping it free and available for all those healthcare students who are looking to hone their medication-related skills. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.